We're now very glad to join Dan Willis for another roughly an hour, I think this is going to be, of chatting about his experiences. Now, Dan's a very interesting person to speak to because not only did he have the Disclosure Project press conference experience, and we talked about the follow-up to that in the last hour, which was very interesting, and also he's got a good perspective on the media angle because you used to be a CBS, was it CBS, Dan?
ABC.
ABC, sorry, my alphabet's getting mixed up. I'm just a dumb British person, so... Dan has got that experience too, and what we began to talk about in the last hour a little bit was the links between the UFO ET phenomenon and the energy issue, which, as I said, was what really woke me up. And, you know, what I say to people is, well, if you look at the evidence and you look at the evidence of these ET crafts coming here and apparently doing various things on this planet, we've heard a lot of different types of stories from, you know, them just flying over people's heads at quite a low altitude to actually landing, taking samples, and also things like Travis Walton's experience where he was taken aboard the craft. And apparently he was looked after for 5 days and then brought back to the Earth. And that Travis Walton has a remarkable story. So when you look at all that evidence, you have to then think, well, what powers these things? You know, I say to people, do they run on coal? Do they run on gas? Do they run on nuclear power? And it would seem logical to realize that they must have an advanced power system. And again, some of the Disclosure Project testimony talks about topics like this, doesn't it, Dan? You know, we've got people like Mark McCandlish talking about the ARVs. I don't know what you know, if we can sort of just talk about that a little bit, you know.
Yes, well, you know, it's quite real. The truth of the matter is, you know, we've had inventions made here on Earth that have been suppressed for many years, yeah. And the reverse engineering that, you know, Colonel Corso spoke of, you know, has derived for over 50 years, you know, technologies that have been suppressed, you know, because of energy interests, you know, and profits and all this. Yeah. So, and CBS, as I spoke earlier, let me turn off the phone here. I was saying to them that I'm not willing to do a testimony unless I could say that we, quote, have the scientists willing to come forth in an open congressional hearing that can prove we have the technology to end the energy and environmental crisis, you know, unquote. You know, that's a really important statement.
Yes.
You know, because every single time, every single media, when it tries to cover that fact that we have the witnesses, we have the testimonies that can prove that we have these technologies, they refuse to air that on major media because it would cause such an upheaval, and you know, it gets down to the core issue, which is coming back to the UFO ET issue, which is at the, or could you say, the cornerstone of... All the cover-ups, you could say.
Yep.
It gets back to energy and control.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And again, you know, what I mentioned in the last hour was the similarity between the way that people are treated, in terms of if they've seen a UFO land or something, you know, they're ridiculed and harassed in various ways, which has been exactly paralleled with people who've worked at in the energy field and have, you know, come across the various technologies. I mean, we look at, for example, you know, the great man Tesla himself, what happened to him. I mean, here we have a world-class physicist, and indeed, you know, as I remember from my college days, we have the unit of magnetic flux, which is how the strength of the magnetic field is measured, is named after Tesla. And yet he died penniless, and the FBI took all his papers and folders in 1943.
Right. You know, no thanks to J.P. Morgan or anybody.
Well, exactly, you know, and that ties the right into the energy cartel. And, you know, I think what I'd like to speak with Dan about now is this kind of offshoot, I don't know if that's the right word for it in this case, but this, I suppose it's an appendage to the Disclosure Project and CSETI, which is the Seize Power initiative. And I wondered, you know, if Dan would tell us how he became involved with that and what the sort of history behind it is.
Well, I was one of the top secret military witnesses that testified. Had one of the least significant testimonies compared to the other witnesses.
Yeah.
It should have been a world-changing event. It should have changed everything as we know it if it was properly disclosed and covered by the media to the full extent of the message and given the worthy attention, considering you have over 400 military witnesses, which include astronauts, admirals, generals, a lot with supporting documentation. If we had the open congressional hearings, which we were requesting for, and then it wouldn't have been an issue. But what happened was that the media carefully edited that out and made the whole thing look like a bunch of UFO people just wanting to have congressional hearings on whether or not UFOs are real or not, which nobody gives a flying hoot about, because it doesn't affect your daily life.
Yeah.
This would impact your daily life. This would mean you wouldn't be paying the amount of money you are for gasoline, everything.
Yes,
everybody
absolutely.
Should know.
That's the core thing, isn't it? Is the money really and the control?
Right. So after the National Press Club in 2001, and even after doing the campaign tour across the United States to major cities, every single media cut that part out about the that we have the energy solutions. So it became apparent that the intelligence community, which we have the documentation for, which people can look up at the disclosureproject.org site, they can read the official documentation that they essentially control all the media. And so it's not our government, it's the rogue operations operating, infiltrated within the national security system that keep this from the people. Out of, I don't want to say out of frustration, but out of, not being able to come forth with this, with the witnesses that can prove that we have these technologies that, were brought about from the study of these extraterrestrial craft that, crashed in the 40s and so on. Dr. Greer then decided to form Seize Power, Space Energy Access Systems, which the website is seizepower.com. That's SEASPOWER.com, which I'm one of the technical advisors. Once again, I'm the least significant of the technical advisor. Everybody else has PhDs. I had a bit of experience. I've been a broadcasting engineer. In the past, the highest class licenses, and I've worked for the government, the Naval Electronic Engineering Center, for 13 years in San Diego.
Right.
I also worked with Dr. Marcel Vogel, which was IBM's top scientist when he set up a laboratory. Researching, I helped set up the laboratory with him.
Was working with Dr. Vogel when you were doing work with Seize Power?
No, not at all. This was back in the early 80s.
Right, sure.
Seize Power was formed after the May 2001 press conference. No, I'm just saying my background was studying unconventional approaches in science. I knew that Dr. Greer had identified down in the Caribbean an inventor that had a device that was putting out over 500 watts with less than 1 watt of power going in. And I knew Professor Ted Loiter, who's the chief technology officer, and I, in the middle of the night, my wife looks back at it humorously because I just stood up in the middle of the night at midnight and I said, I think the professor needs my help, and just came to me really strong, and I called him, and he said, yes, I could use your assistance because of my background in electronics and so forth. So I flew over, met with him. We make a long story short. This is talking about months of operation. I flew with him down to the Caribbean and met with the inventor, and, with this area, I've met with a number of different inventors, and it was people who are extremely brilliant, genius level, have written books on advanced calculus and figured out, the mathematical flows of the fluid dynamics of electronics. People like Colonel Tom Bearden, which I met with, and John Bedini, who is a kind of a legend in the over-unity field.
Yeah.
I've met with these people, and it's like one thing after another. I mean, there's many different inventors. There's hundreds of inventors across the country.
And I think this is the thing, isn't it? When you look at the evidence, you find, you think, oh, it's just a couple of people, tinkering about. But there's hundreds of these people. When you actually go in there and you start to look for them, there are lots and lots of these people doing these little, research projects in there. Some are quite large scale, and some are just, sort of almost a hobby.
Some people are, delusional. Think they've got something figured out, but they don't.
Yeah.
Some people are, they're so afraid, so paranoid, and that's for good reason.
Yes.
I've met with in a meeting in San Francisco with Dr. Greer and a number of inventors. I heard the horror stories that some of the people have gone through that have tried to bring forth, amazing technologies, such as, a little sphere that using geometry and things, pulling the energy from the ether is the power thing, amazing stuff.
Right.
They've had, people come in, the men in black kind of thing, national security acts slapped on them that they can't come forward, like a gag order basically not to say about it because of it,
these sorts of things, in your terms are just totally unconstitutional, aren't they? It's just blocking someone from a freedom of speech, speaking about.
Well, what we have, if a person researches and looks into this and he looks at the hundreds of witness testimonies, what we have is a rogue illegal operation that has its ties into the wealthiest corporations having to do with energy and things. And you think about it, back when they were reverse engineering these craft and they covered it up, and they had to bring in the top scientists from different corporations, as testified by Colonel Corso.
Yep.
And they discovered that, wow, look at this. we have a little tiny box that produces enormous amounts of energy, has no moving parts, produces no pollution, never wears out. How can we possibly put a meter on this thing and bill people?
Yeah.
And there's just no way. How can they do it? So what they had to do was they had to use the national security system and create compartmented operations within operations called unacknowledged special access pod, where even the president gets lied to and denied it doesn't exist. And so what we have is this kind of like in the movie Frankenstein, you created this monster, based on greed, so to speak, and all of a sudden it broke the straps and it's out running around doing on its own. And our government, our military, our intelligence community doesn't really have any control or access to it because it's basically is figured out how to use our national security system to protect itself and keep it operating. And one way they do it is through anybody that comes up with something that, look at Stan Meyer, who had 42 patents in the patent office that was running his car on just water,
Yeah.
Imagine, and it has no pollution. We have plenty of water on this planet. Imagine if all the gazillions of internal combustion engines out there, were able just to do a simple adaptation and be able to run on water.
Yeah.
We would solve the energy crisis and we'd solve a lot of pollution. But, this is not, the man was murdered. And, he was offered a lot of money, beforehand, which he, about $1 billion, I understand.
Right.
He's just one person. There was back in 1973, there was, Ed Gray, who came up with, with a motor that was producing over 100 horsepower, just using the radiant energy that Tesla worked with to running a motor using a conversion tube that took this energy that had properties similar to electricity but had different attributes to it, and he was able to make it work so that he could power this vehicle. And he was on television and everything, and then the DA came in and, you know, like a SWAT team, and took everything out, and he never was able to bring forth. I mean, I'm no scientist that, you know, were able to take crystals that put energy into it in a certain way, and it produces many more times energy than you're putting into it. And all of a sudden, these people come in and clean out the whole laboratory, and they said, well, what charges? And they said to him, you know, it was trespassing, you know. Dr. Vogel, who I worked with, who was, you know, IBM's top scientist, he was responsible for creating the magnetic coating everybody uses on their computer hard drives. He developed the red and blue phosphors that we use on our television set. You know, he's a master at luminescence, LCD technology. I mean, the man was, he had like over 100 patents to his name.
Wow.
I worked closely with him on studying how, you know, thought interacts with water and quartz crystals cut in specific geometries. We're working with 24 medical doctors. But he used to say to me, you know, if we ever discover something really that would threaten the powers that be, you know, he said our laboratory and everything will be all cleaned out. And I thought that was a bit far-fetched, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
This was back in the 80s, and I didn't have the knowledge that I know now that to know these things are real.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I think, again, you know, looking at it from my perspective, the fact that you had that background with Dr. Vogel and, you know, he told you those things, and then, you know, now you're in the position that you're in, that was kind of like almost a preparation for what you're doing now, you know, even though you didn't know it then and it wasn't necessarily by design on your part. You know, I think that's one of the things that seems to happen in life.
Well, Andrew, I think, you know, people are inclined in different ways. I've always been, even though I've been in, you know, traditional orthodox electronics training and broadcast communications, I've often felt that the laws of electronics and whatnot, you know, which all have to do with certain mathematical constants, you know, all have a correlation with connected to all life, you know, on many different levels. One thing Dr. Vogel said that always stuck with me was that these laws of science and physics that we understand, the laws of the newfound sciences or that which is on the edge or borderline, you know, sciences, the laws that operate are akin to the regular physical laws that we have researched and studied, but they operate a little differently, you know, in some ways. And they give keys to understanding, you know, how the laws of creation operate. And I believe that, you know, people get indoctrinated. I guess it's a benefit not having a PhD. You know, I haven't gone. I'm pretty much self-taught on a lot of things, and so I keep open. And I think a lot of times indoctrination through our school systems will tell you that you can't do certain things, or a person who is not indoctrinated doesn't know any better, like the inventor I'm currently working with, he will, you know, who made that motor that produces 500 watts out of less than 1 watt in, he didn't know he couldn't do things, and he just does it, and he keeps trying. He's very tenacious, and therefore he's not hampered by conventional wisdom.
Yes, and I think, you know, a thought that came into my mind there was one of the phrases that Dr. Greer uses, and not just him, but quite a few people, is thinking outside the box. And I think before you can think outside the box, you actually have to realize that you are in a box. And some people don't seem to realise that. And, you know, I, like you, I've been open-minded to these things. I haven't got a PhD either. You know, I did go to college and do a bachelor's degree, but that didn't really prevent me from, you know, looking at the wider picture, trying to think outside the box, trying to look to, you know, an intuitive solution rather than a logical one sometimes.
You know, oh, absolutely. There's very many people who, you know, like Professor Leuter, you know, he has a PhD, but he is very aware and very open to a lot of different possibilities outside the box, and so are a lot of people. Yeah, but some people, they seem to take everything as, you know, this is the knowledge that's been handed down, you know, such as some of the laws by Maxwell, for example, were written, and, you know, who gave theories on inductance and like that.
Sure.
Einstein later, you know, disproved that, but they didn't want to upset the status quo, you know, because all the textbooks have been written.
I think it gets very complicated in this area because I've done a little bit of research on these very areas, and my understanding is that when Maxwell first developed his equations in the 1880s or 1890s, they were actually a little bit more advanced, and they actually had multidimensional aspects to them. And then there
right.
was a pair of mathematicians called William Gibbs and Oliver Heaviside, and they actually looked at Maxwell's work, and they simplified it, and they took out all these extra dimensional terms, because they said that they weren't needed for, you know, a sort of complete theory or something, or for the theory that was they wanted to address at that time. And they were always left out. But if you go back to Maxwell's earliest work, you'll see these extra terms in. And I think relativity is kind of a different branch to Maxwell's equations, because relativity generally, you know, is to do with the nature of space-time and, you know, why gravity is like it is. Whereas Maxwell's equations are really sort of to do with electromagnetics, you know, electromagnetic waves and electricity.
Right. Well, there's some good grounding, you know, for people on, you know, science and things in the colleges, but, you know, still, you know, people are punched out like cookie cutters, you know, in believing a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the limits of the box, let's say.
Yes, and I mean, just to, you know, to sort of just add a little to that, I didn't find out about the William Gibbs and Oliver Heaviside until, you know, a couple of years ago, and that was sort of like, you know, almost 20 years after I was in college. You know, so they don't teach you those other important bits. So, you know, like you say, that you do get into this cookie cutter or whatever, you know, to an extent. The other thing I was going to ask you specifically about, you know, related to the work with C's power is, I understand, you know, going back to a little way to what we were talking about before about inventors who have had technology, you know, and then had it confiscated or stolen from them. I think one of those people is actually Charles Brown. Is that correct? You know, he's one of the disclosure witnesses too. I don't know if you had any knowledge of that.
No, I don't.
Right. I think Dr. Greer had mentioned that in. I think it is actually in the executive briefing somewhere. Charles Brown. Anyway, so we can pass on that for now, and you know, I can always edit that bit out if it doesn't sound very good.
I didn't read that about Charles Brown, one of the 20 witnesses that joined me in National Press Club, you're saying.
Yes, that's right. He also did some work on a free energy device. I think it was maybe in the 60s or 70s or something. I'm pretty sure it was him. I'll have to check into that.
Yeah. There's a lot I don't know. You know, I've just had experience in dealing. In fact, it was sort of new for me, dealing with all these inventors. It's not like that's something, you know, I've had past experience with. So I got a chance to, you know, meet with some of the leading edge people that are doing things. You know, such as you know, Bedini and Colonel Bearden.
Yes. I mean, I watched recently Colonel Bearden's energy from the vacuum. It was that was posted onto Google Video, I think, a couple of months ago. It was very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of different approaches. You know, a lot of people doing magnetic pulse motors. You know, where you know, with neodymium magnets, you know, they don't. I think in 100 years they lose like 7% or something of their energy. So yeah, quite an energy source there. And then you know, some people have been working with resonance circuits that aggravate the flux balance that's happening in nature, to put it in a simple terms, produces electrical power, differential.
And is it that principle on which the MEG operates, Colonel Bearden's MEG, or is that another principle?
The MEG it puts out a tremendous amount of different waveforms and things. I haven't had a chance to actually work with the MEG myself, but I've heard it's been reproduced a few times.
Yes.
I mean, my specialty has been more magnetic pulse motors is what I've been working on and dabbling recently with the hydrogen production of the electrolysis that occurs when you put in the water that will break apart the bonding, so you get the hydrogen and oxygen coming out of the H2O, and you can drive a vehicle on it and whatnot. And I hear that recent fellows working on cancer research with using microwaves, he's a broadcast engineer as well, found that he could take salt water and attuning a microwave signal into it. And one fellow in the Philippines driving a car since 1960s, there's a reason why we're still running everything on gasoline and not incorporating these technologies that have been around by human invention, not having anything to do with extraterrestrials. In fact, I understood that back in the 20s, we actually had a process that could run an automobile on water, and not steam, but hydrogen production.
Of course, I mean, there are many of these sort of tales of people doing this. I mean, again, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of the Tesla's Pierce Arrow car, which he ran, I think it was around about 1933 or something, that sort of time period. Mm-hmm. And he had developed this, some type of battery unit, he called it, and he just connected it to this car's motor, and he said the vehicle is powered. And they were driving this thing around at 90 miles an hour, for weeks and weeks and weeks, with no fuel.
Yeah.
So again, when you look at this, there's lots of examples.
There's tons of examples, lots of examples. The big dilemma is we've got basically an infiltration into, and it's a multinational thing. It's not just the United States. It's it assures its structure by keeping control on these things, that they don't come out and start producing them like cookie cutters. But according to a scientist report back by UN scientists back in this was back in the year 2000, that if we don't start producing these things like cookie cutters off of an assembly line for people by the year 2004, they were saying that the environmental damage on the planet would reach a point where we could not quite reverse the damage, and it would reach a point of irreversible damage. But I believe that the Earth can heal itself, but people need to this is the whole reason why Space Energy Access Systems was formed, because they've identified, if people go to the website and they read the strategic overview, it identifies all the different methods and means in which inventions like these, which could solve the world's energy problems and environmental problems, have been suppressed over the years. And that is the whole purpose of SEAS, is to attempt to circumvent these methods, to bring it onto major media, to get the world to aware that, okay, we have a solution, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, we'll cut into the major profits of these, you know, oil cartels and whatnot, but we have to do that for the future of the Earth. And, you know, they're just going to have to find another way to, you know, tax us and make money, right? Tax us for use of water or whatever, you
That's
know.
Right. I think there are a lot of, you know, complicated issues which, you know, stem out from this, which will, you know, I don't think we've worked out how to address. I think, you know, as we were speaking, you know, when we were setting this up, some people seem to think that, well, you haven't managed to get one of these things out because if you can produce this device, you know, you hear this phrase quite commonly, don't you? I'm sure people have said it to you, Dan, where they say, if you can produce a device that will give you energy from nothing, you're going to be a millionaire overnight, you know, because it'll, everyone will want it. But that's just not how it works, because when you have got such a device, as you've said, you know, this is documented time and again, some secret group, sometimes not so secret group, comes in and will confiscate the equipment, or even if they don't do that, they'll block you. I mean, I remember Dr. Greer going on Coast to Coast and describing the story of this device, which I think it was perhaps the one that you'd mentioned, and then it ended up in a legal battle about 3 or 4 years later. And this guy he just ended up as a legal situation which was tied up in knots and went nowhere. And that's what seems to happen. That's the way they do it. Whatever way they... You know.
Very familiar with how that worked. But that wasn't... that was just plain greed. What happened was he had an unannounced business partner which came out of the woodwork and took the inventor and the device and held it hostage, you know, basically, you know, demanding more money. So you have these human factors added into the whole thing as well.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I think, again, as we were saying earlier on before we started recording, that this isn't going to happen overnight because you literally are fighting this multi-trillion dollar industry, and they know what's at stake, so they will use only a tiny, you know, they can just use a tiny, tiny percentage of their resources to block you, and then they can do it. It doesn't, because they've got all the power. And
yeah.
You know, the way I look at this whole issue is that once people become aware that these things are real and they do exist, and if they understand that that is true, then they're going to start asking, well, why have we been forced to pollute the environment with all this clunky technology, you know? And when people start getting to that point, then we can, I think, begin to expect the balance to start shifting.
Yeah, some very inconvenient facts for the people to be accountable for, you know. And the UFO ET issue with the energy are so linked together. One, it can be transposed with the other one as far as, you know, keeping it suppressed, because once they understand that, yes, we've reverse engineered these things, it means comes back to energy, you know.
Yeah.
So essentially it's the same thing. They want to and they can do that because they're utilizing the national security to maintain that secrecy through the media. And that's why you never hear about it on, I mean, you may, once in a while, you'll hear a little local news or something will come up, and it'll come up with a little blip, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard these things. You know, you hear something, wow, that's fantastic. You know, you think, oh, it's going to be out on assembly lines, and you'll be able to, you know, go to your local dealer and pick one up. Yeah. But you never hear about it anymore. It all disappears, and either they'll offer you a lot of money. They'll slap a National Security Act on you, or they'll threaten your life and your family. You know, okay. One way or another, as Daniel Morris said, they have different teams that come in. He was a cosmic clearance NRO operative that was one of the witnesses that joined me, and he basically stated it is because of the energy issue that's associated with the UFO topic. That one way or another, they'll have a team come in and put an end to any type of disclosure of this one way or another.
Yeah, if we look at the energy issue and how everything is currently metered, you know, petrol is metered, electricity is metered, gas is metered, and the amount of solar power that is being used is very, very small. I think it's probably less than 1%. You know, certainly in this country, in the UK, you know, solar power is very weakly used. But
we don't have a lot of sunshine, though, do you?
No. This group of people, whoever they are, whether they're bankers or whatever, the global group, I tend to call them globalists, they want to meter everything. I think, you know, I'd like to just make that point, that not only do they want to meter the energy, you know, they want to meter the water. They meter the water in this country too. They want to meter your ability to grow crops, which is, you know, organisations like Monsanto will now want to sell you the seed every year. They don't want to have products which sell seed. They meter your health. You know, they'll sell you the pills and you have to keep coming back for more. They're not interested in cures. They're interested in giving you pills which will you have to keep coming back for more. So they meter that as well. So it's really just this metering which we're subjected to, you know, in many aspects of our life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think people are, you know, it's coming to a point where people are seeing more wars, more raising prices on things. They're seeing that, you know, people are getting ill with all kinds of diseases. The pharmaceutical companies are charging, you know, everything is extracting enormous amounts of money from the poor average guy out there, but the world is going down the tubes further and further in the paradigm that we're currently operating in.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's got to get to a point where the people as a mass say, you know, enough is enough with, you know, all of your, you know, taxations, your controls, your modifying our food genetically, how you're, you know, how we're with the pharmaceuticals. You know, there's technology that recognizes the more complete energetic aspects of our being that the extraterrestrials have used for thousands of years. There's a whole gamut of technologies and exchanges that could occur if we were able to have an exchange with these off-planet cultures. But as it is now, we secretly have been trying to shoot them down. Well, they have shot them down, you know, according to the witness testimonies.
Yes.
And, you know, we have a lot of house cleaning to do before we can open up to an exchange. But as the extraterrestrials who spoke to Colonel Corso as he drove across the desert at White Sands, said to him that, you know, asked him, you know, to shut down their high-power radar, which was affecting their guidance systems. He said, you know, the colonel said, you know, well, what's in it for me, you know, if I do that? And the extraterrestrial said, a new world if you can take it, you know. And I think that's what we're at the crossroads of, is being able to accept this new world. But first we have to clean house, and where we have to clean house is the illegal rogue operations that are happening, you know, within our governments and things that are manipulating, controlling illegally our national security interests for their own profiteering and, you know, support of the industrial military complex and the oil and energy cartels. That's essentially the bottom line of what needs to happen before we can move forward.
I totally agree, you know, and we're seeing, you know, more and more now. I mean, just today I read a story about President Bush has sacked one of the top generals, and some people are saying that this is in preparation for an invasion of Iran, because the guy who's just been fired, you know, didn't really think invading Iran was a good idea, whereas this new guy is apparently more, you know, in support of that type of approach. And, you know, these are the choices that are now being presented to us. There's there's all this stuff that we're discussing, you know, the free energy and a totally new way of living, which will bring its own problems, I'm sure, at least initially, which we'll have to work out. Or there's this other way, which these other people seem to want to go down, as we mentioned briefly in the last hour, that we're going to just get, you know, bigger and bigger wars and more sort of, you know, unprovoked attacks on sovereign countries and this sort of thing. And, you know, and Britain is involved in this too, you know, we're just as bad, if not worse, you know.
Oh, very much so.
You know, so this is, I think if people can act, if this choice is made more visible to people, then hopefully they can sort of stop and think about it more carefully, and evaluate all this evidence that we've been discussing, and you know, look at the websites and get the DVDs and whatnot.
Yeah, they need to go to disclosureproject.org or seizepower.com. You know, to look at some of the stuff, and you're absolutely right, Andrew. It's you know, it could be a world that is not going in the direction that we're currently going. It could be a whole different world where it won't be the poverty and famine and, you know, the haves and the extreme haves and the extreme have-nots. You know, it would be a thing of the past. You know, people would be able to, you know, have plenty of food, have plenty of energy, and do it in a way that is not, you know, destroying our environment.
Yes, and you know, again, that's it, isn't it? I think what you and I seek for the general population, if they want it as well, is equity. You know, where we have equity amongst people, and the ability to really help those who are in need, and not just have some short-term, quick-fix solution, you know, like sending some money to some charity, you know, which is good, but we, you know, I mean, for example, I'm going off the mark a bit here, but we have this big initiative in this. In fact, it was in the US and UK, Live Aid, that was in 1985, and we have this huge outpouring of sort of feeling about the tragedy in Ethiopia, and you know, and the millions of pounds were raised to try and solve this problem, and yet we look at the situation now, and it's still essentially the same as it was then. We've had, you know, it's probably worse. It's just that the news media don't cover it in the same way. So we've had all that goodwill and all that money, and it's had no long-term effect.
Yeah. Well, we have to pull it out from the root, and the root is a lie, and the root stems back to probably, you know, before the as Eisenhower became aware that as the people who have the big money interests that have the interest in the industrial military complex and the oil cartels, they saw it as a threat, and so they basically abused the national security system, created these lies, and now what's happened is we've got decades upon decades of lies built on more lies, and if it ever came out that people learned that we didn't have to have all these awful wars. We didn't have to have the destruction of our environment, and, you know, just on and on and on, the atrocities that did not have to occur because this system that basically feeds on war and feeds on money for oil and everything else, which is all based on a lie, and it protects itself through secrecy. If this, at some point, it needs to get disclosed, or else the path and the direction that it's going is as a very dark future. You know, the people of Earth need to, and you know, if it wasn't for the work of Dr. Greer, who nobody would have known. I mean, there's a lot of people that know, but not in the level that he has taken it to, being able to find you know, over 450 military witnesses that are on the inside of these projects that know about these things, that, you know, want the public to know, but they're under a national security oath. I mean, like, 20 of us got in front of the National Press Club. Breaking our national security oath, that's a serious thing. But the fact that it's an illegal operation, they cannot hold that law against us, as, you know, Daniel Sheehan said. So what has to happen is the work of Dr. Greer and these witnesses that have come forth, some have had their lives threatened not to come forth, needs to be looked at by people. And I suggest everybody going to the DisclosureProject.org site, because it's through these witness testimonies that, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that they're all lying, especially at the rank and level and the official supporting documentation they have. So if you discount the fact that all of them are lying and you know this is true and you connect the dots together, and it definitely will paint the story of this rogue operation that's illegally infiltrated our government system, then what we need to do, but, you know, it's not being broadcast on the BBC to the people. It's not broadcast on CNN to the American people, because they, you know, basically have associations, the intelligence community, with every media outlet that can, under national security, kill any story that comes out saying that anything to the effect that what we're talking about is real. You know, so the people will never get the message. So this is what we're up against.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think literally what you and I are doing right now is just trying to, you know, make one tiny chip in that edifice. You know, it's just, we're just doing our own thing. We're not governed by, media's agenda. We're not going to be edited by them. You know, anyone that downloads and listens to this just gets what it is and what we've said. You know, they can agree with it or they can disagree with it, but there's been no real control other than sort of tidying this sort of audio up a little bit to make it presentable. That, you know, that we're just giving people the raw information.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to happen. And the news media is so obsessed now with putting a good face on things or a bad face on things. In other words, putting the spin on. You know. And then put out stories about celebrities and other inconsequential things, and they've got to get the house in order, because like we've been saying, it's going to be, we haven't got a lot of time left now. You know, we're getting very close to this critical point where we're going to have to go one way or the other.
Yeah, indeed, it's a tough one, Andrew, because. Because with the control of the media, they pretty much have control of the perception of reality.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, it's what Karl Rove said, isn't it? You know, about creating your own reality. I think that was one of the phrases that he used. You know, I was going to use that when I was making a video. You know, to create the reality that they want.
I was like, there's a lot of things. I think I seem to keep on moving forward. You know, and working one lie upon another lie, and what happens is, people know there's extraterrestrials been visiting us. I think a lot of people are past ET 101. They know there's many credible people who have seen it. It's like that's not an issue in people's mind. What's an issue is, why are they here? Why are they visiting? Why doesn't the government say anything? Everybody knows the government knows something, obviously, especially with all the resources and military and everything. They know what's going on, but they're not telling the people. I mean, that's quite obvious and blatant the way they operate. So everybody just kind of, you know, okay, goes along with it, you know. Knows we're being visited by off-planet cultures, and they know the government for some reason, and that reason is because of the technology they discovered and the vested money interests that are involved, and more importantly, the geopolitical control that these, as you say, globalists are working toward. The extraterrestrial factor does not play into that in a beneficial way for them,
yeah.
other than possibly saying that, okay, yes, they admit UFOs are real, but they're going to have to build a multi-trillion-dollar weapon system in space, as insider Wernher von Braun, who was inside the secret government, so he knew the false flag events were going to occur, and that the last card was going to be the alien card, where they're going to hoax a alien invasion. And this would work for the industrial military complex because they would have to spend trillions of dollars on this weapon system. And as we know, they're not hostile. They have only shut down our nuclear weapons. And there has not been, with their advanced technology, anybody with an IQ over mud, as Stephen says, you know, we're all breathing the free air of planet Earth, so obviously they wanted to take over our planet like they show in the movies. They could have done so easily, but that's
Absolutely.
Not the issue.
Yeah,
they're looking forward to us to mature as a race on this planet, to be able to clean our house and get to the point where we're a peaceful civilization, not the warring type and that's lying to its people and deceiving, and, you know, all this has to pass, and we have to evolve to a place where we can join the other peaceful civilizations in the galaxy that are, you know, there's another world that's awaiting all of us, and I'm hoping that we clean house soon so we can, all of us on this planet can enjoy that new world.
Me too. And I mean, I think I can't remember whether we mentioned in the first hour the statement from the former head of Lockheed Skunk Works, Ben Rich. Lockheed Skunk Works is one of the fairly large organizations which does a lot of the black projects.
Yes, Andrew, that was a very important statement.
Yeah, and he said that we have the technology to travel to the stars. We've got it already. So, you know, I'm looking at the other testimony in the Disclosure Project, such as Mark McCandless talking about the ARVs. You know, we've got things outside the Disclosure Project as well. We've got a chap called Edgar Fouché who talks about this craft called the TR-3B, for example. And I did a little bit of research into that.
And he said it would take an act of God in order to, in other words, it's that heavily compartmented, that heavily secured and operating within our governments that with the enormous amount of financial resources and controls that they have in that, that's why he said it would take an act of God to release these technologies. And the statement he made was quite quite profound, because it makes it apparent that everything that we have for our current technology is so passe, because everything that you see in a science fiction movie, the most far-fetched imaginable scientist says they've already had it. They've had it for like over 50 years.
And again, if you look around, you'll see there's a lot of evidence for that, you know, for many of those technologies.
So it's vitally important. In fact, it has to do with the entire future of this planet, you know. So it can't get much more important than that. So I really enjoyed discussing this with you and sharing it with the listening audience.
Yes, and I hope, you know, that there are some younger people listening out there somewhere who can look at, you know, again, as we said in the last hour, check this for yourselves. But, you know, you can hear how convicted we are about this, and, you know, and we hope that some of that will be transferred onto other people, that they will at least, you know, look into the rabbit hole, and then, you know, start encouraging others to do the same, because that's the first step. And you know, the steps that probably Dan and I took, you know, many years ago, some almost subconsciously perhaps in some ways, but you can do it consciously as well.
Yeah, I love some of the movies that have been coming out, you know, like The Matrix, you know, taking the blue pill and V for Vendetta, and everybody, you know, fed up with the government lies and all moving forward. You know, there's some movies with the messages that are coming out, you know, besides Independence Day and Signs and War of the Worlds, you know, you got two elements of movies coming out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of tack on to that a little bit, I heard somebody else say, I don't think it was Dr. Greer, although he's actually a good example of it, in that it's we've got to do the disclosure, because we still have no official disclosure from governments. I suppose it's starting to happen a little bit in France, and we've had a release of some of these files, but it's been done in a fairly low-key manner. So, you know, ordinary people are going to do the disclosure. You know, I'm not a government agency, so if I go around giving people this information, will you think that because I'm not a government agency, you know, I must be lying? Or will you think because a government agency is a government agency that it is lying, if you see what I mean? You know, we as ordinary people can do our own disclosure. We can, you know, take the information from the disclosure project and show it to people who don't know about it.
Absolutely, Andrew. I'm just a regular guy that just happened to have a top secret clearance and, you know, got involved in certain things that I did. Anybody who's a citizen of Earth has the right to come forward and speak, you know, because it's our birthright that we've been hijacked this technology from. You know, you have the testimony of 450 plus military, corporate, intelligence witnesses to back anybody who wants to take a stand with this information, yeah, with those witnesses backing you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, any people that are not, people that are just ordinary people that can see that this is valid, take the information and give it to one other person. But look, as Dan says, if you're a guy or a lady who's worked on some of these secret projects or worked on a project where, you know, you've kind of been a bit unhappy about what you've been working on because you know that something bigger is going on which you're not being told about, tell everyone else about it. If you can do that safely, you know, come out and tell your story just like these other people have, because we need more and more people to just, you know, to break this sort of wall of secrecy, and we're the only people that can do it.
We need more ordinary people that's coming out and doing this. Yeah. And, you know, it's tough for these guys because they are monitored carefully, and, you know, they're under oath, and for them to come out have severe repercussions. They need to have the congressional hearings so that they can be released of their national security oaths. That was the whole purpose of the National Press Club in 2001, mm-hmm, to release these people from these oaths and allow them to speak, but the Bush administration denied that. Yeah. So the people have to come out and speak and demand the truth be told and the lies stop.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I think that's a good note to end on, that you know, we want basically to be told the truth. I'd just like to finish it by thanking Dan again for spending another hour with us and telling us some of his knowledge about the work that he's doing, and I'd also like to thank him personally for his efforts in that direction, because, you know, if he's anything like me, you know, you're spending your own time and your own money, and, you know, you quite often you're experiencing frustration, or, you know, but we're looking towards this sort of new future that is there, if only we can kind of reach out and embrace it.
Yeah, you know, one thing that people can do is, with there's people like Stan Myers, for example, has 42 patents in the patent office, that was running his car on just ordinary tap water. You know, bring this to your members of parliament, or the ones in the U.S., you know, contact your representatives and ask, well, you know, this man had patents and was running his car. He's now dead. But, you know, where is the technology? Why isn't this being disseminated to the public? You know, put it to them. Make them accountable. Put their feet to the fire. That's what we need to do.
Yes, yeah. Okay then, Dan, that's right. That's a good positive note to end on. That, you know, take some action, write a letter, make a phone call, send a fax, and that's what I try to do as well.
So, a pleasure, Andrew.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan, and we'll do this again soon.
All right. Have a good one, my friend.
Okay, and you.
We'll be right back.